Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Fabio. We're now moving on to Dr. Jay Logan. Characteristics of perpetrators in homicide followed by suicide incidents, National Violent Death Reporting System in 17 U.S. states from 03 to 05.
Thank you and good morning. I'd like to first thank all the co-authors for their help with this project and the presentation. And I'd also like to make sure everyone knows that I have no relationships, financial relationships to disclose. So homicides followed by suicides, also referred to as homicide-suicide, is defined when a person kills one or more individuals and commits suicide shortly thereafter. There are approximately 0.2 incidents per 100,000 people in the U.S. annually. However, these incidents account for over 1,300 violent deaths annually and about 25 violent deaths per week. Furthermore, the impact of these events go far beyond the victims. They can cause long-term psychological distress for the family members and friends of the victims, and they can have a profound impact on communities. Typology of these incidents is typically based on the victim-perpetrator relationship. The majority of the intimate partner or homicide-suicides are intimate partner-related. We also have some other types of homicide-suicide, such as filicide suicide, in which children are killed. We also have other family-related incidents, which often involve killing of parents, in-laws, or other relatives. We also have extrafamilial incidents, which often involve multiple victims that were unrelated to the perpetrator. Previous studies have found the majority of the perpetrators on the whole to be white males in mid to late adulthood. At the CDC, we've also conducted studies that looked at some of the perpetrator characteristics and found that estimated that approximately 10% have had documented mental health condition and approximately 30% are intoxicated at the time of the incident. Now, while a lot of the previous studies have looked at characterizing perpetrators on the whole, there's actually little research on perpetrators by type of homicide-suicide incident. And this could potentially increase the understanding of how the different types of incidents might vary in their etiology. So that was the first objective of this particular study. Secondly, what we did is we compared homicide-suicide perpetrators on the whole to other homicide perpetrators who commit homicide alone and those who commit suicide alone. And the idea here is to sort of get an understanding of a little bit more about the perpetrators, put them in the context, and maybe identify some common threads that are occurring across the different kinds of perpetrators. And I also want to add a little bit here about when we think about homicide-suicide perpetrators, and generally some of the previous studies have looked at these perpetrators as a different type of violent perpetrators. However, we do tend to see some trends where some of the homicide-suicides were more homicidal-driven, what it looks like is an escalated violence that led to a violent death, and then out of remorse, regret, the perpetrator commits suicide. And then we also have a lot of different homicide-suicides where there's evidence that they were extension of suicides, that the perpetrator committed the homicide knowing that they were going to commit suicide. And so we have sort of this mix here where some are more homicidal-driven, some are more suicide-driven. So we are interested to sort of see how, on a whole, how they compare to other homicide and suicide decedents to see what are some of the commonalities. And to investigate these objectives, we use the National Violent Death Reporting System. This is a state-based active surveillance system that captures information on violent deaths, such as homicides and suicides. And this is an incident-based system. And what that means is that the National Violent Death Reporting System was able to capture all the victims within an incident, so that's how we're able to look at homicide followed by suicides. The data sources that are used for the National Violent Death Reporting System include death certificates from vital records, coroner and medical examiner reports, and various law enforcement reports, such as police reports, ballistics reports, and crime lab reports. Currently, the National Violent Death Reporting System is operated within 17 states, 16 of them are statewide, California, we collect data in six or four counties. The data that was used for this study include 2003 to 2005 data, although I should mention that NVDRS started off in 2003 with six states, and we've been adding states incrementally over the years, and so now this, the NVDRS is currently, we're using 16 states. Now, for the analysis here, we have it in 17 states. However, I only used 16 states because I wanted to use all the statewide data. We didn't have complete information for California, so California was excluded. Homicide and suicide were determined by the manner of death reported on the death certificates, and homicide-suicide perpetrators were identified as suicide victims who perpetrated homicide within a day prior to his or her suicide. And as you see from the analysis, we have a lot of suicide decedents. We had 20,188 suicide-only decedents, 420 homicide-suicide perpetrators, and 5,932 homicide suspects. I had to exclude 12 homicide-suicide perpetrators because we couldn't identify the victim-perpetrator relationship. And then of the 408, again, the majority were intimate partner related. Roughly 75% were intimate partner related. 33 were filicide suicides. 29 were involved other family members, and then 42 were extrafamilial homicide-suicides. And so for the first objective, when we're comparing homicide-suicides across the different types of perpetrators, and also comparing homicide-suicide perpetrators to suicide decedents, we were able to compare on a whole variety of different characteristics, including demographic characteristics, but also some common characteristics, risk factors, for suicidal and homicidal behavior, such as whether the perpetrator currently had a mental health condition and whether they were being treated, they have a history of substance abuse problems, were they suspected of being intoxicated or have a prior history of suicide attempts. And we also captured some life event factors, such as were they experiencing intimate partner problems, did they have financial problems, job problems, or other relationship problems. And again, we also looked at across protective factor, how many were actually in using mental health treatment at the time. One limitation to this study was when we compared to the homicide-suicide perpetrators to only homicide suspects, we could only compare across by demographic variables. Right now, we're not unable to capture information on characteristics of perpetrators because, well, they're homicide-only perpetrators because a lot of it is unknown, and also they're non-decedents, and it's very difficult to get information on individuals that are non-decedents. So we compared the differences across perpetrators using Fisher's Exact and Kruskal-Wallis tests, and we compared the preceding circumstances between homicide suicide perpetrators and the suicide decedents. We used multivariable logistic regression, and I just adjusted for age, sex, and race, ethnicity, just to make the groups more comparable in these regards. So as we found, compared to the previous study, we also got similar results where we found, of course, the majority were male perpetrators, majority were of white, non-Hispanic race ethnicity. The median age was mid to older adult, 53 years, and approximately a quarter were suspected of being intoxicated, 13% had a mental health condition, and of course the majority were perpetrated with a firearm. Now, when we break out the characteristics by type, again, we see pretty much across the type that are perpetrated by males, and of course, higher proportion among whites and non-Hispanic perpetrators. But we noticed that for filicide suicides, over half are perpetrated by female perpetrators. When we look at mental health conditions, we noticed that a high proportion of the filicide suicide perpetrators had a documented mental health condition, and about 20% were in treatment at the time of the incident. Now, as expected, we found that a lot of the, for the intimate partner related and the other family related incidents, they were obviously experiencing intimate partner problems and other relationship problems. But what was interesting here was that intimate partner problems were even common among those who did not victimize their intimate partners. This is actually, there's previous ideas about this, that we thought that intimate partner, a lot of these incidents were sort of an escalation of intimate partner violence. And if we hopefully protect the intimate partners, then there wouldn't be a homicide, then there wouldn't be the homicide-suicide. And so what we're finding here is that sort of protecting the victims alone doesn't necessarily remove the problem, that we have to protect, we have to actually prevent the entire incidents. If we protect the victims or the intimate partner victims, then there's a possibility that they can go find other victims. So we have to think about addressing the precipitating intimate partner problems from the very beginning. Now, when we compare the homicide-suicide perpetrators to other suicide decedents and homicide suspects, across the board, we see that the majority were perpetrated by males. And we noticed that the homicide-suicide perpetrators, the demographics were more closely similar to the other suicide decedents in the sense that they were committed by people of older age. Homicide suspects, there was a higher proportion of those homicide suspects in the 10 to 19 years of age. We also saw that by race, that the homicide-suicide perpetrators were more demographically characteristic of other suicide decedents and were different from other homicide suspects, where both of these homicide-suicide perpetrators and the other suicide decedents were majority white, and then the homicide suspects a higher proportion of those of black race. So here's a sort of a whole blizzard of odds ratios, but the point of this here is that when we compare homicide-suicide perpetrators to other suicide decedents, and we use the other suicide decedents as a reference, we found that through the documentation and narratives that there was less information or there was not as much reporting of mental health conditions and mental health treatment or having a history of alcohol abuse or drug abuse or a history of suicide attempts among homicide-suicide perpetrators. So this sort of lends you to think, well, maybe they're not really characteristic of this other suicide decedents. But we did notice when we compared to other suicide decedents that a very high proportion of the homicide-suicide perpetrators had precipitating intimate partner problems. And these are problems that we recoded that occurred prior to the actual homicide. For example, intimate partner like arguments, but stuff like they're going through separation or custody or some sort of like child, you know, if they're in the family court for anything. These are the kind of intimate partner problems we're referring to. So when we think about homicide-suicide perpetrators. And we want to think about the what proportion of the homicide-suicide perpetrators are there, or what's the likelihood, I guess, of someone committing a homicide preceding their suicide. As we can see, it's really rare. It's roughly 2%. But if we want to think about, okay, well, what happens if we look at who's males, the intimate partners, the likelihood of committing a homicide prior to suicide can double or it's almost triple. And then if we had these three characteristics, males, intimate partner problems, and in access to a weapon of lethal means, it can quadruple. So as you can see, the proportion or the likelihood of committing homicide prior to committing a suicide can increase. And then these three characteristics were about half, or common in about half of all the homicide-suicide cases. And we just focus in on this group here, as I mentioned before. The majority of these are occurring sort of the precipitating IP circumstances that one of the intimate partners would request a separation and or there's a current court legal battle going on at the time. So overall, most homicide suicides are perpetrated by males. Just over half, we found filicide suicides had female perpetrators. A high proportion of filicide suicide perpetrators recently accessed mental health treatment. And intimate partner problems were common, even for perpetrators who did not victimize their intimate partner. So this study does have numerous limitations. Right now, it's represented, this particular study, I'm sorry, was representative in only 16 states. NVDRS is in 17 states, but this one only representative in 16 states. As you can tell, we had small sample sizes, so it was hard for us to get really in-depth to the characteristics of the homicides, the types of homicide-suicides. Sometimes information on mental health and substance abuse is not routinely reported by law enforcement officials, and we're unable to capture other stresses, like stresses related to child care, lack of social support, and abuse in childhood. And of course, we're unable to capture characteristics of homicide suspects, which would be a huge added value to the study. And right now, we still can't infer causality in the study. But overall, homicide-suicide incidents account for many violent deaths, have a lasting impact on families, friends, and communities. Identifying and addressing precipitating factors can potentially prevent these types of events, whether it's reducing escalating anger or trying to reduce suicidal ideation. Preventing intimate partner problems and reducing caregiver stress might significantly reduce the number of homicide-suicides. And just some recommendations, we'd like to move toward thinking about, you know, preventing the incidents from occurring, think about addressing intimate partner problems, such as, or other conflict problems, such as teaching social problem solving and coping skills. And we can also think about maybe recruiting some of the mental health providers to help prevent some of the filicide suicides. For example, maybe ask family and friends to help with caregiver responsibilities or monitor treatment. So I'd like to acknowledge the following individuals for their help on this study. And for more information, there will be more released in the next month or so in the American Journal of Epidemiology. Thank you.